Welcome to Behind the Funny. This is Scott Higgins.
I am Ace Aceto.
And we are all the way out in Falmouth, Massachusetts.
We're on the Cape.
On the Cape. I needed a credit check just to pull in the parking lot.
Oh,
here
shit. There's a lot of fancy people walking through the parking lot.
I was a little intimidated.
Yes, but thank God our guests, we have two, and our guests are staying in a room, so we have a nice quiet place instead of the lobby. We've done them in lobbies. Mike McDonald had the benefit. We did it at a booth in
Bertucci's
in Waltham.
That was an interesting one.
And he was pissed because then who did we take not long after? We took him to a nice restaurant, and Mike was pissed that we didn't take him to a sushi place next
door.
Well,
he was mad that they weren't serving Caesar salad at this time.
Yeah, so
that was the first 10 minutes of the podcast was Mike complaining.
Mike complaining. Hard to believe,
no
I know,
salad.
If you know Mike McDonald. But our guests tonight, we are really excited. I have been hounding people left and right, even on the West Coast, just basically saying, hey, if you're in New England, we'll meet you. You know, can we come in and record? And again, you've heard us say we love when we have people who are mentioned on the podcast by other guests. And so we have the comedy dynamic duo of Al Ducharme and Bernadette Pauly. So welcome, Al.
Oh, thank you so
much. And Bernie.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, I know. We're in their room. They even invited us in the room.
We're fully clothed, by the way.
We already stole your wallets and your IDs, so it's going pretty well.
Actually, holy shit, she's right.
Yeah. It's magic.
Thanks for making the trek.
Yeah.
No.
Hey, listen.
It's well worth it.
If it's between making the trek here or your house in L.A., I think we could.
This is an easier one for us to do.
Yeah.
We're not at that big-time podcast level where we can afford a flight to L.A.
We're working on it, though.
Or you do it the L.A. way. You pretend you can afford the flight, but you really can't.
Now that you've taken our wallets,
that's not going to happen anytime
soon. Well, we do the one-way ticket, and then we go, okay, we got a great episode. How the fuck do we get home?
Yeah.
But, you know, we're talking about traffic in New England,
I was
and you
just
guys are living
say,
in L.A. Do we
yeah,
even
yeah,
hold a candle
compare.
To L.A. traffic?
No, L.A. traffic is, it's not even traffic. It's just punishment for being out there in an evil place with evil people. And I'm a New England boy.
The fact that we just brought up L.A. and Bernie just said, I need my wine glass.
She just pulled the wine glass.
No, I'm a New England boy, so I know what to expect. But we were staying with some friends at the Cotters. And
yes.
So Wareham. That's Dom Fig.
Dom Fig. And the Cotters, in fact,
Cotters.
Tom, we've talked about Tom a bunch of times and Kerry and
right.
Tom actually
gave me shit when I was working
he gave
with
you
him
shit.
Yeah.
About not being invited to be on the podcast. And then we invite him to be on the podcast.
And he's never available.
He's a busy fella.
Yes, he is.
I get that. But Ben, don't give me shit about not being invited. Mm. Ben invited
he does spread Tom. Himself thin, too. He tries to accommodate everybody.
No, we'll have him on eventually.
Actually, it was funny. I got to call him back because when Al was trying to get in touch with me today, I was getting a massage. I apologize for not answering your call. I was on the table and I hear my phone going off.
Exactly.
Yeah, I smell like
Providence is known for their massages.
I smell like eucalyptus. I was on the table and I hear my phone going off, but it was a weird ring, so I knew it was Facebook Messenger. I go, watch, I'll bet you that's Al. And then 2 seconds later, I hear my actual phone going off, and it's a message from Tom Cotter saying, hey, Al Ducharme's trying to get in touch with you. Give him a call. Here's his number.
Like, I told him, I go, hey, man, I text him, and I didn't hit the send.
He didn't hit the send button when he sent me the message to confirm
you
yesterday.
You did that, sweetie?
Yeah, I did it. It's not the first time.
Bernie's gloating. Well, I thought...
It's that damn Wi-Fi the Cotters had at their cottage.
I thought we switched these guys to 7:30. So we're eating in the dining room downstairs, and it's 7, and you're like, they're in the lobby. And I'm like, but I thought we asked them if they'd want to meet at 7:30, and what happened?
I thought they wouldn't be here till 8. I'm like, there's no way they're going to get here.
It was probably in that message that he didn't hit send.
Yes.
So
see, it all comes full circle. Yeah. That's fine. It all works out in the end.
We're all here.
We're all having fun.
Settled in. And
we're relatively drug-free, and it's all
for
good.
The most part. And we really appreciate that you guys are on, because, like I said, you guys have both come up on on past shows.
Yeah, because I didn't start till early 2000, so I've heard a lot of the stories, especially like when we had Frank O'Donnell on and Charlie Hall, and Ace is always talking about how you, Al, and Tom were kind of the upperclassmen at Periwinkles when he was starting, because you guys had been there for a little bit of time.
Right, we had a
before
years
he came
before
along.
You.
Yeah, you were the upperclassmen. Like, we were the freshman class, and then we come in, and it was you, Tom Cotter, Mike McCarthy.
Yeah,
Greg Fitzsimmons.
Right.
You know, you guys were the guys that, like, we were still doing open mic night only, mm-hmm. and you guys had graduated to Thursday night showcase night.
Woo-hoo.
So that was our goal, to get to that. You know?
You had made it.
You had made it. You were on the college.
I ended up getting a $25 gig one night. And
yes.
Yeah.
That's usually
that's
when
I knew. I said, I'm in. I'm a comedian now.
You know what the sad part is? And we talk about this the only time. This is the only industry where that's what some people still make today.
Yeah.
For
the
weekend
pay scale
hosting.
Hasn't gone up.
It's gone
still,
backwards.
That's what they still make.
It's gone backwards. Yeah, there's a, I think headliner money is opening money.
From back then.
Mark Maron just recently on one of his podcasts said that he used to make for like a middle spot what some headliners make now.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And this is 20 years ago.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's crazy.
Well, and it was cash then too.
Yeah.
There was a lot of cash gigs. Yes.
There was a lot of cash gigs, and from what some of the other guys have said, it's a lot of coke gigs.
Yes.
Hey, I'll give you half cash, half coke. How's that?
Sounds good. Well, like Ken Rogerson said, it started with mostly green, then it was half green and white, and by the end it was just white.
Yeah. And all those guys, it's funny because we've had like him and Santarelli and Mike McDonald and all those guys, when you talk to them and you ask them dates, like what year did you start? They have no idea.
They cannot
pick any of it. And they're
they can remember all the stories, but cannot tell you when at all.
But there are comedians that know the exact date, who they were with, time.
Yes.
And I'm a little foggy on that because I was in and out of it. I was opening up for Frank Santos, the R-rated
hypnotist.
I was doing that. I was hired at my own college that I was attending, at Rhode Island College.
Yep.
So it's hard to say. And then I took a year out and then went back. So
you used to do the coffee ground at Rhode Island College? That was one of the first places I had gone to.
Now, Bernadette, did you start in the New England area?
I did not.
No,
I'm
where
born
did you
and
start?
Raised in Revere, but I moved to New York City as soon as I graduated college, so I started in New York.
Okay.
I identify as a New York comic, and people would come up to me constantly saying, "Oh, Kenny Rogerson, you know,
and you're
Don
like,
Gavin,"
and, you didn't
and
know
I had no clue. I knew them. I knew their names as a fan, or but I was like, "No, I don't know that guy. I don't know that guy."
Right.
And I've since met them through Al, because now I come back to New England and work.
Right.
And I've met them all, and they're great.
Right. Now, where'd you go to college?
Emerson.
Okay.
Yes.
And I'm surprised you didn't have a feeling to try it during your time at Emerson?
No. I was a European studies major. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I actually was acting in New York for a long time, and then a manager said, "You should do stand-up because you're fast and sarcastic." So I didn't start stand-up till I was about 28.
Oh, okay. So you went to New York really to be like,
I went to be an actress, but I cocktail waitressed and made so much money that I just really, like, it was all about just living in New York.
Yeah.
And it's amazing I'm alive.
So you went to act and you were a waitress, which is unusual.
Very unusual. Yeah. I got
that's
the SAG card and all that stuff. But once I did an open mic, the bug hit me and then it just took off.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
We haven't heard that one before.
Everyone
every comic
says
the same.
They're like, "This is awful. I need to do it again."
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah.
Whether they had a great set or a shitty set, they're like, "No, I need to get back
up
there."
It's like being a cutter. You just, "Oh, I got to keep doing it."
That's the true comic.
Yeah.
The true comic, when they have the worst set, have to get back
up
again.
Oh, yeah. You have to go back
Absolutely.
And conquer it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
Especially if it's late at night.
But then you said the true comic, then that's the key, because there are people that try it and it goes horribly, horribly wrong for them.
Yep.
And they never
do it again. That, right. They're like, "Hey, I checked it off my bucket list. Yeah. I tried it.
Done
I don't
deal.
Want to do
well,
it
those,
again."
That's exactly what we've talked about.
Those are the people you call mentally healthy.
Yes. Well adjusted.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is the final episode of the podcast because we figured out what's behind the funny.
We finally figured it out.
We finally figured it out.
Yeah.
Mentally healthy.
You're right. Because we want
a normal person. person does it, because you've been around those people, right? They come and they try, and they're like, I don't want to throw my life away. Like, and they tell you.
Oh, absolutely.
And you'll tell them, oh, that's great. No, you should. You should go ahead and take that $100,000, and that man loves you, and have some kids, and get the white picket fence. And they're like, yeah. And then in your head, but I'm never going to fucking do that.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
But you should do it, because you deserve it. And I'm going to go work for a cokehead that's going to stiff me 10 bucks and post-date the check for 12 days.
Yo. People don't.
Oh, yes. Or post-date the check.
It's still happening, by the way.
Or
it still happens. I thought, you know, I'll go like 8 years where it's, oh, I haven't had an incident.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden it happens.
And I'm like, are you kidding me?
It still happens.
The BS.
Son of a bitch.
The scam.
Yeah. I've told the
story. I didn't bring my checkbook. Oh, I got, you know what? Well, Venmo me. What?
Well, yeah, what's that? Yeah.
You know, it's just,
I've actually told a story before, and I won't mention names because he's still in the area, but you're going to know who it is as soon as I talk. I did a gig. It was me and Dave Fitzgerald, and I can't remember who else. It was down in Pawcatuck, Connecticut. Bullwinkle's Pub, drove in a snowstorm, was making $50 to host, drove down. It was like February 18th, and 3 months, one day earlier than 3 months, I get the check. It's dated February 19th. So, you know how it says, like, cash within 90 days? I literally had one day to cash the check. And I made it to the bank. I did
good
not.
For
it was
you.
Like, I was like, fuck that. I'm cashing this check.
Wow.
But I had to wait. And that same person, anytime me and Ed Regine would go, you know, for a while I was working with Eddie Regine all around New England. And anytime we were heading north, we'd have to make a pit stop off 93 to go to this
Winchester?
Guy's house. Yes, it was Winchester. Off
Philly,
the Fells
no
way.
Money down.
Okay, see,
come
I
on,
don't,
man.
I don't, this is one of the guys I don't know, but I feel like I know him.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
We would have to get off the
Fells. He got me for about $100.
Yeah. Well, that's
I was
not
even
bad.
And yeah, but some people he
oh, thousands. A lot more. Oh, yeah.
I chased him for $200 for 6 months one time.
Yeah.
And then I just didn't bother.
We would have
I was done after that.
But I remember, I'll never forget, Eddie would get out of the car. Billy wasn't home. He would get out of the car, go into like the breezeway, and he'd come out, son of a bitch. Fucking, you know, and then he'd say, because he said, oh, I'll leave it in an envelope in the breezeway.
Yeah.
And it never showed up.
But he made sure they went and bought his 2 ounces of pot. You know?
Yes.
But I remember calling his bank in Westchester.
Did you really?
I would call and I would say, hey, I owned a home in Somerville near Tufts University.
Yep.
And I would say, hey, Elaine, it's Al Ducharme. She goes, ooh. I go, how's it looking? She goes, if you come in now in the next half hour.
There's money.
You get here now. And I go in and I cash it. And anybody who came in after me, he either bounced
screwed.
Or they wouldn't clear it.
Right.
Awful.
Yeah. There's been a few people like that. It's, you knew if you got a check tonight, go first thing in the morning, because if you were second, you weren't getting your money.
Right.
I just don't understand why you're running a comedy venue. You'd have the money in advance. There are still people thinking they're going to wait for the door money to come in before they make the pay. And it's like, well, what if you have it? What if the weather? What if it's just a complete debacle?
Yeah.
You know, you still have to pay these people. They're scheduled to be at your... You're showing this.
That's why, you know, Ace produces shows. I have a theater show that I produce, and I always swore.
Did you get a call for that, Bernie?
No.
I left two messages. You never know. But, you know, I always swore that I'm not going to be one of those people.
Yeah,
I check the night of. You could cash it that night if you want to, because I'm not going to get that reputation because, you know, I hate when I have to chase people for money.
Right.
I'm trying to get booked other places and get other work lined up and everything else. And now I got to remember to call this guy to see if he sent the check out. And our buddy up in New Hampshire, you know, who we got to chase for a year to get your check.
Supposedly it's gotten better.
Are you going to make me say his name too?
You can.
Well,
the old
joke about him, if you have a gig in May, what is that called?
Christmas the money?
Oh, man.
That's hysterical.
Yeah.
You know, but those guys exist and still to this day. I mean, it's...
And these
book, I heard he's and gotten book, better, though. I
he
heard
has,
someone,
because
I heard
a lot
someone
of people,
went after him and he's gotten better. But
I'm
at the point now where, you know what, because I kind of did both. I did the white picket fence day job and still do comedy, but, you know, I'm limited to just New England, you know, and the Northeast. But I'm at the point now where it's like, you know what, I'd rather not work on Friday night. As much as I love getting up in front of a crowd, I would rather not work Friday night and then have to do a gig and then have the pit in my stomach constantly chasing you down
of
for the money.
Not. And for the most
for
part,
not great money either.
I've weeded those people out.
Right, yeah. Right.
But there's always someone new around the corner.
Somehow they come up, yeah.
And most places, don't get me wrong, 9 out of 10 places you work for or more, they're very professional.
Right.
Yeah.
They have it together. Your money's in the safe. It's a great setup. They police the room, all that. But every once in a while, you get one of these.
Oh. It happens. Yeah. It gives you a pit. And somehow
and
we
you
always
know when it's coming. Like you can tell.
Yeah.
You
oh, yeah.
That's all the BS.
Oh, yeah.
You
can tell.
Know,
yeah.
Like, oh.
There's a lot. Yeah. Yep. There's a lot of BS signs. It's like, come on, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the saying? You can't bullshit a bullshitter. You know?
Yeah.
And
right.
We're all bullshitters.
Yeah,
we that's right.
What
right.
That's
what
we do.
That's what we do.
That's what we do for a living.
But somehow we always end up on this tangent with comics because it just happens because we're all in that same
they're battle
boat.
Stories.
But yeah,
they're
absolutely.
They're battle stories.
But so now, like I said, Al started, you know, Boston, Providence area. Bernie, mm-hmm. you started down in New York.
Mm-hmm.
How did you guys meet?
You're not going to believe this.
I think we will.
We met in a comedy club.
No.
I didn't see that
we
coming.
We found love in a hopeless place.
That's right. Yeah. We fell in love in a hopeless place. It was, you know, we were both in New York City. We were hanging out with the same clan. And we were all like taking subways home together or sharing cabs or in New York City. And I guess we were both involved with other people at different times.
Mm-hmm. We knew each other for years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then 9/11 came around. 9/11 came around and kind of altered everything. Everybody's
life. Oh, everyone down there, right.
So I think we had a couple of cocktails and then mm-hmm. I put my tongue in your mouth and
there you go.
That was pretty much it. That was once we swapped saliva.
I never got married to you, and we did the same thing at Periwinkle's years before. Come on. No.
Because you had more cocktails.
Yeah, right.
I don't even remember that.
That's So was it the Cotters? Was that like part of the circle? Because was Tom and Kerry down there at that point?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They were
I knew Kerry from acting class, so that was their circle, but I did know her. And I knew her years before I did comedy, not realizing I was going to do comedy. And then I met her years later on the circuit. So she was always friendly with me and introduced me to Tom at the comic strip.
Yeah.
So then I'd see her around. And then I remember, they introduced me to you.
Mm-hmm.
So it was more your circle because you had just moved back to New York, right?
Right. Yeah. That's true. I moved away many years ago. And then I returned 4 years later after licking my wounds for my first round.
In L.A.?
No, in New York City.
Oh, in New York.
I lived in New York City twice. The first time was for 4 years, and then I went back for 12 more.
Which is funny because I moved to New York City in 1990, and that's when you were leaving New York City the first time.
Oh, wow, so you missed each other the first time.
Yes. So why did you leave the first time? Just to
it never clicked for me at that time, and I found myself on the road quite a bit. I was doing all these college tours. Yeah. I was going over to Europe and doing Heineken tours, and so, I was seeing the world.
Yeah.
And places I thought I'd never go without having to join the military, it was pretty cool. So I was doing that, and I was always going up to Boston. Boston was where I got my stage legs and cut my teeth, and I was always up there. Barry Katz was my college agent and my manager. And
yep.
Then I was going back and forth from Boston to New York. I was doing that. And then I met a civilian and got engaged and bought a couple of houses, investment properties, and was kind of weaning a little bit from full-time stand-up. I was trying to keep some sort of balance. And
yeah.
It didn't last long. I just knew my
she
calling.
Was a bitch.
Yeah. And I thought I was going to be able to do both. And she pretty much said one or the other. And I said, the other.
Yeah.
Can I say something? Can I say?
Cause you may.
I didn't
hold
know
on
you
a second.
Then,
you're a woman.
Know her.
You may speak. But hold on. Now.
You met her.
It's amazing she hasn't killed him yet.
You met her in a comedy club. She met you doing stand-up comedy. Oh.
True.
And
yes.
She thought it was amazing and great, mm-hmm. which probably happens to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But then when the ring went on her finger, she was like, okay, quit and work for my daddy.
Yeah.
Which, as a woman, I dated. I didn't really date. It was New York during the 90s, so I woke up with various people. But no, a lot of guys thought it was so cute and adorable. They were like, oh my God, that's awesome. Or guys in acting class.
Yeah, right.
And they think it's amazing. And then, like, a couple of weeks in there, and you're like, oh, well, I do this every single night of my life.
Right.
And then they're like, cut the shit.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
They like the idea of it and the novelty, but the reality of it, they do not like.
Well, another comic that you may know, Cal Verducci.
I do, yeah.
Same exact thing happened to him. He got married. Mm-hmm. They met in a comedy club. 2 years later, she said, all right, you tried it. And he goes, no, you don't understand. I'm not stopping.
And he was
this what
doing
I was.
A ton of road shit,
Yeah.
He grinds it out on the road. He still does.
Yeah. Right.
she said, well, no, this...
I didn't know
you
got to
choose.
Yeah.
You either...
Sophie's choice, right?
Yeah, exactly. And he went, okay. Well, and they're not married anymore.
Right,
I mean, he said, you knew what I was when we met.
Yeah.
I'm not changing.
I would have been miserable if
and that's exactly what he said.
It would have ended in divorce.
But here's the thing. You weren't sitting around smoking dope all day. Like, you actually bought houses with her and brought home money, and you're very responsible.
Right.
Yeah. I was a landlord, and, you know, I was managing the properties and all that. And that was my way of saying, hey, see, I'm doing this, but I'm still going to do stand-up
comedy. Yeah.
And I'll take less crappy gigs and take the better ones. That was
right,
the whole point.
Right.
But it was never enough. So when she said all or nothing, I said, all right, adios.
Yeah.
But I think you're right, Bernadette. It's this thing when they first see
you,
it's cool. This is fun. Mm. And it wears off really quick when you're not there.
Well, and in defense of them, now you're a comic, so obviously we understand the animal of stand-up comedy. I'm talking to Bernadette Pauly right now, male-female partnership here.
He's looking right in her eyes.
Hermaphrodite. I prefer the term.
But a civilian... A civilian, it's a little different.
It is.
You know?
It is.
And
right.
When I was, my career was starting to really take me places. So I was away a lot. I was on the road.
Right.
I was gone for weeks at a time. And she's sitting home here hanging out with friends, and they all have boyfriends, girlfriends, husbands, wives, and she's the solo. So I get it. But to go from being 100% comic down to 50% comic was not enough. So I was truly compromising.
Well, I know the feeling, because honestly, my divorce, you know, I was a comic. I was doing comedy for 8 years before I met her, 9 years. And it was novel. It was a novel thing. Mm-hmm. It was great. Oh, well, once we were married, it was before we had kids. Once we had kids, then it was...
Cut the shit.
She's home, you know, on a Friday and a Saturday night taking care of the kids, and I'm off going to New Hampshire to do a gig.
And people are applauding you.
And I'm taking pictures after the show, everyone's having
a
good time.
I'm
whooping it up and having a great time. She's not really thinking about the fact, hey, I didn't want to drive to, you know, 3 hours to the middle of New Hampshire for, you know, okay money.
At a bowling alley,
yeah, probably. But, you know, I get it. It's just, it was just changed. Yeah, who books that?
I've done a lot of bowling alleys, and I usually had fun at them.
Yeah, yeah.
No, and that's what I got to say. My wife's a saint, because she is a civilian, and we've been married for 28 years, and I was not a comedian when we got married. Mm-hmm. We got married in 93. I started comedy in 2001.
And
she has never given me shit. Doing comedy.
No. Oh, good for
never
you.
Once. Yeah. But she knew when we got married that I tried it in college in 88 and 89 and just kind of played with it type of thing. And she knew it was a dream type of thing to do. So she just kind of got it, you know.
Well, but
I've never tried to abuse it or anything. And I've gone away for weekends to places where I've gone for the weekend. And she was home alone with the kids. But I also tried to balance it as much as I could and give the respect back type of thing and just tried to balance out and make it
some
work.
People can handle it, you know, that kind of
and
life.
She's a saint.
But maybe that's the way to do it. They were together for many years.
First. Yeah.
Here we are thinking, hey, this is what I do.
You knew it
when you met me.
If anything, what I did was I cut back on weekends. You know, if I would only work like maybe 2 weekends a month instead of every weekend.
I knew I have 3 daughters. When my youngest was born, she turned 1. I said, I either try it now or it's just never going to happen. I have to go try it now. I had just met Cal Verducci. He kept saying, you need to try this. You need to try it. He goes, I think you can do this. He goes, you got something that I think you can do. And I said, I either go up there and try it now or I'm just going to continue to be a fan. And I talked to her about it. And I said, if I'm going to do this, I got to invest some time into it.
Right.
This is not a, I'm going to go up now, and 6 months from now, go up again. This is going to be like a couple times a week.
Crappy open mics on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Yeah. And
we made it work. And here I am 17 years later, you know, 18 years later, still.
Oh, good for you, man.
So, you know, you can make it work, you know, if you both respect what each other is passionate about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I try to support her and stuff she wants to do in reverse, and, you know, it would just make it work. But again, it's the two people involved.
Right, right. You know, so it's a mutual understanding.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
So basically your wife is seeing another guy.
Basically,
which thank God
it's not me, because I'm on the road too much. So
no, I think I actually think it's Bill Simas. So.
It might be. Yeah, you never know. He's
whenever I book a show, she always says, "Is Bill on this one?" So I think there's something there.
The weird part is the he matched them up. So
I think I might have even on purpose, but that's okay. Yeah. One less thing I got to worry about every week.
So when did you guys? So then you moved back to New York.
Yes.
September 11th happens, you guys meet. Mm-hmm. When did you guys, or what precipitated the move to LA?
Well, we spent quite a few years in New York City in the comedy club scene and the circuit scene. We saw that it was changing with social media, the social media presence and all that, and it was taking on this different identity.
It was becoming more feast or famine.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah.
So we were, Bernie actually went over to Scotland and worked some comedy clubs over there.
I did the Glasgow Festival.
Right.
And I had a great time. I worked for this guy named Tommy, who owns the Stand Comedy Clubs.
That, till this day,
are still my favorite comedy club chain to work.
Yeah.
And he's a really nice guy. And I started meeting all these comedians and realizing it was more of a middle-class profession over there. It wasn't completely feast or famine.
Right.
Like, you could make a decent night's wage, and comedians would say, oh, go here. Here's 4 one-nighters.
Right.
And then it started to sound like what people told me the late 80s or early 90s was over here.
Yeah.
Really? Like, you could make $500, $600, $700, $800 a week.
Right. Yeah.
You know, if you hustle.
Just at one-nighters. Yeah.
And then sometimes do better and da-da-da-da-da. Whereas over in New York City, you're going to live on $300 a week or a $2 million TV deal. There's not much
there's
of an in-between.
Right.
So I thought, is this worth it? And I also really respected the scene over there more, because there are hecklers and there are drunks, but resting on your laurels over there and just doing an hour on being short, tall, black, white, female, male, hermaphrodite, it's not going to cut it. You can address whoever you are, but just being a shtick or a hook, they're not interested.
Okay.
Like, they do not care about your, like, it's like, you better be good, give us a good hour, or we'll tell you you're an asshole.
Right.
You know? So I liked that. I thought it was a little bit more, I guess, pure, if you want to, you know, a romantic idea. So I was thinking, maybe we're middle-class people. Well, we're not really. We're low-class, but we aspire to be middle-class. I was thinking, do we move over there and have, like, a decent quality of life and a few weeks of vacation a year, like comedians
Coming
over there
to
seem
the
to have? Yeah. And then I think I booked myself over there for, like, a month and said, sorry, I'd like to come back with my husband in a few months. And I got to know the owner, and he booked it so that Al would be playing Glasgow and I would do Edinburgh, but we'd stay at an apartment in between together.
Yep.
And,
nice.
then
switch off.
So we were there for 2 weeks. We were going to do the third week. We were going to do a room in London, I think, for him. Sorry. And then we were going to do 1 week in the moors of Scotland as a vacation, because we had...
Yeah, we're going to go to Loch Ness and do all that stuff. So.
Yeah.
And then, of course...
Scotch whiskey, right?
Yeah.
Scotch.
We're having a great time over there. We're keeping busy. And I'm thinking about, do we move here? Is this like the move that we... I don't know if I even filled Al, you know, because I just plan these things on my own. And I'm like, maybe
By the way, Al, we're moving.
Yeah, exactly. And then I got a call, like, before the Friday night show, I think. And it was someone in L.A. that said, hey, I work for so-and-so. We have a gossip show here. Can you be here Monday morning to tape 68 episodes in L.A.?
Holy shit.
And I was like, you're kidding me, right?
Because
I come to Scotland, I've pretty much given up on the
Catch 22, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So I discussed it with him, and then I spoke to the producers, and then they sent the contract. And I was like, I don't know. I guess, should I do this or not? And then we were like, well, I guess that's what you do when you're a comedian. You go wherever the check is.
Yeah.
And I was like, Al, stay, go to the moors and have a good time. But you didn't. You were like, now I'll go back
to
New York.
No, I said, like, 48 hours later, I said, you know what? We'll come back here and do this.
Yeah. And, so then I was commuting to L.A. and going back and forth thinking, it wasn't a very good show. And I was thinking, this is going to be canceled any day.
Yeah.
And I just kept commuting and flying back and forth like a Kennedy.
Oh, my God.
And then it got ridiculous. And then Al was like, you know what?
Yeah, I could tell it was like, taking a toll. She was leaving on Sunday night, coming back Thursday night.
Yeah.
And then doing gigs on the weekend. Yeah. And I could see it was taking a toll. And I was fortunate enough to be booked out for pretty much a full year. So I said, listen, I'm out at least 6 months right now and probably more. So if you want to make the move, I know we've been talking about change. Now's the time to do it. And we did. And we moved to L.A. I said, we'll try it for a couple of years.
We loaded up the car and the dog.
Yep.
We drove because the dog didn't like to fly at the time.
Yeah. Oh, we drove across country. Yeah.
Wow.
And then
I've driven all around the country, but I've never driven coast to coast
before. Coast to coast, yeah.
I've always flown, rented a car, and drove around for 2 weeks.
Right.
Go back and, do like a tri-state area, Colorado, whatever. But this was a drive across the country, so.
And was it a straight drive, or did you do gigs along the way, or?
Originally, we were going to say, hey, we'll set it up that way. I said, no, we got to do it now. You got to book that way in advance.
Yeah.
So we just did the drive. We did it in 3 days.
Yeah, you did all the driving. I did a lot of complaining and whining. But I will say to everybody, I never had a desire to do it, but you really should drive cross country.
Yeah.
It
once.
Is quite the trip. And I'd love to do it at our own pace again sometime.
Yeah
take a little longer and
take
book those
5
gigs.
Days.
Yeah.
Or longer if you're booking gigs in between.
So we ended up there. We said we'll try it for a couple of years, and it's been 8.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow. So there you go.
And how long was the show on?
A year and a half, right? 2.5
Something
seasons?
Like, yeah. There was a hiatus, and we never thought it would really come
almost
back.
Almost
2
years.
And then it would really come back.
And what was the show? Or if you don't want to say it, because you
get
said
into
it was
right
shitty.
Now. No, all
right.
We'll talk
no,
about
that's
it.
Fine.
Yeah, we'll talk about it.
It was a cross between
I don't need to give
the
them any
View.
PR.
No, yeah.
A
no,
cross
no.
between The View and The Goss. I'm sorry, I almost said it. What was it?
It was a cross between shitty and shittier. Yeah.
No.
How many episodes?
The View and the Talk?
No, Fashion Police.
They were
it one of those?
Yeah, it was one of those. The funny thing is, that's so not me. I was like, why are you calling me? There's like a million people.
Because you were smart and sarcastic.
I guess.
And you had worked with
the
producer before.
Yes, I worked with them before. But the funny thing is we'd have these stars or starlets or whatever come on and all these bloggers who now, those bloggers and... Radar Online, they're huge.
Yes.
Yeah.
So these were young
influencers.
Kids I was super nice to, but I had no idea. In my head,
how
I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I can't tell the pop stars. I don't know who's who. I can't tell the difference. They're all the same. So I'd have someone there, and in my head, I'm like, why are we even, what is this conversation? we had like Lindsay Lohan's dad on, and I'm like, I don't want
to
talk
to
this piece of shit.
They were trying to be.
I want to say you're a piece of shit.
Yeah,
but,
right.
So it was, sometimes I just like stared into the camera like, what can I, but whatever. It was
interesting. Who's this Taylor Swift
chick?
Hey, it's a
paycheck.
Yeah.
They did it. It was set up like the Tonight Show. It was 5 cameras. They had 180 people in the audience.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of people behind the scenes. It was very professionally done. Done at Bronson Studios, right? Is that what it was?
It was.
It was,
no two dicks, I'll tell you that much.
No. We're going to get into all the different projects that you guys are into
goodness.
Right now.
Okay. But anyways, that's what made us head out to the West Coast.
Yeah.
And, it was great. And then
Al is doing F is for Family.
Right. Yeah,
for
so
Bill Burr on Netflix.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest with you. I was ready to like, okay, let's go back east. Because I love the East Coast.
Yeah,
I love the comedy of the East Coast.
Me too.
I love the comedy scene.
You do?
Oh, totally.
I was going to ask you that.
I don't care for
Do you notice the big differences
yes,
between.
It's better comedy, better comedians.
Doing clubs
on the East Coast.
Oh my God.
And we've heard that from other people that have gone to L.A.
Yeah.
Like, who said that Steve Bjork, I went to LA for a minute and then came right back.
Well, we do the podcast because we're fans of podcasts. So, I'll listen to Joe Rogan, and it's funny because he's talked so many times. Anytime he has an East Coast comic, he's like, yeah, those Boston crowds, man, they'll chew you up. But
you better
get
comic.
Really,
Greg
really good
you better,
when you're out there.
Greg Fitzsimmons said that. He goes, Boston makes you a better comic.
Yeah. Yes.
But it's funny
and
because
I'm not from this scene, but I can right. see it in the Boston
Comics. He goes, because they will tell you immediately, like you were saying about in Scotland.
Yes, yes.
You have to be good. You have to perform
for them.
They're
sizing you up in that first fight.
You can't mail it in, and you
and you're not
going to
do, oh, I'm the guy in a ponytail.
Exactly.
No, it's not.
Right.
They're going to eat you alive.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
But
same
it's funny
type
because
of thing.
Joe in the next sentence will go, yeah, I just can't go back there. It's too fucking cold.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
But yeah, no, I mean, so you were planning, you were like, yeah, sure, we'll move back. And then F is for Family happened?
No, I was ready to go. I said, when you're ready to go back east, let me know. Yes, I mean, that's when F is for Family did happen. But, you know, the L.A. thing, I'm done with the L.A. thing.
Yeah.
But this happened, and it's led to a few other
I'm
things.
Done.
Other
we're
things.
Both done with L.A., but we live there.
But you still live in
there,
right?
Yeah,
and
we
right.
make a point of telling everyone every day, we're done with this. Yeah. Like, I show up at a club, how are you? What time do I go on? What can I eat? I'm done with this.
Yeah.
And you
yeah,
this,
but you're
yeah.
in show business, and that's where show
yeah.
business
yeah.
is.
Yeah, it is.
So
it is. And, you know, and hopefully this yeah. will parlay into even some other things that yeah. we're working on right now. Ideally, and then this won't yeah. be a conversation. But
you know what? You go outside of L.A. a little bit, or even just out to the beach towns,
yeah.
and then like an hour out, a half hour out, you work on Hermosa Beach. It is so different than working
yeah.
in Hollywood.
Yeah.
We
right.
were just there
really?
Last week.
People are
so
out
the Hermosa
for
beach
a good time
club?
And a few yeah. beers.
Yeah.
In Hollywood, everybody's like, why aren't I on that stage?
Trying to get a deal. Yeah.
You're looking at supermodels that right. are rolling their eyes at you and industry people. It's like,
in
right.
Hermosa
I'd
Beach,
do a
everybody's
funeral.
Like, I've done that. Some of them are retired, or they've yeah. been in the business a long time. They're taking it easy now, and they're just out to have a good time. Whereas
there's no
the city clubs, it's like everybody is so desperate and backstabbing
and
just
weird.
The competitiveness
yeah.
is...
I watched a bunch of dweebs about 6 or 7 months ago. Chris Rock was just being really, really fun. He happened to get on stage at the Improv, and... coming up in New York, would watch him from the back of the room. Him, Wanda Sykes, Louis C.K. You know, there were certain people I just constantly watched.
Right.
And it was great. Like 5 nights in a row, they would tweak a joke. They would change a joke. It would get funnier.
You saw
that
process.
Yeah, you watched them working. So I'm like, oh, this is great. Because sometimes I'm in the city in L.A. and I'm like, I'm not going to waste my time. I'd rather go watch the busboy. I'll learn more. And I hate to be an asshole, but that's just honestly how
yeah.
I feel.
Right.
Yeah. Not that I'm Richard Pryor. So Chris Rock is on, and I'm like, great. And I go in and watch him, and I watched all of these, this new thing of these guys coming in, kind of, you know, posturing and watching Chris Rock and kind of looking at the crowd and looking around. And they were watching his fame on stage. Like, no one... They were like, I want what this guy has.
Right.
They were not watching anything he was doing. And I watched them just... I could see them. They were like, I
want
to go on.
This is what I want.
Yeah,
yeah,
I could do that. I could do... Like, and it was just weird because I remember just sitting for years... If I couldn't get up one night at a certain club, I would just watch 5 hours of amazing fucking comedy.
Comedy,
right.
yeah. And
right?
learn from everyone.
And learn
yeah.
from it.
For you, it was technique. About the craft. For those guys, it was about the
it
fame.
It really
right.
is
yeah,
about
yeah.
the
fame.
And then you can't blame
exactly.
them. Well, I do
that's
blame
what
them.
It, that's right. what it sounded yeah. like. Because Louis C.K., I heard him say one time that when he was first started comedy, and he was in Boston, and there were these guys that were like the Mount Rushmore of comedy in
yes.
Boston at the time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And all he knew is it wasn't about money or fame. He just wanted to be one of those.
Yes.
guys. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like what you were just saying. You just watched how he did the craft and
yeah.
how he put it together
yep.
and mm-hmm. everything, and they just wanted to be rich and famous.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
That's
doing
the shallow
work.
Part of it.
Without doing
yeah.
the work.
Without doing the work, exactly.
I remember watching Judah Friedlander perform to two people night after night. Mm-hmm. I remember Wanda Sykes, for whatever reason, would only get like the 11 p.m. spot at the Strip forever.
Yeah.
And I would sit in the back and howl because she was so doing her own thing.
Yeah,
right.
And when there's an ignorant audience who's not really going to give you the time of day, like, yeah. and they're late and tired and drunk, I would be like, oh my God. Like, I didn't know her from Adam because
yeah.
nobody, I was like, oh my God, I think you're really funny. And I'm sure she was like, okay, back off a little
yeah,
bit,
whatever.
You know.
But a little white bitch.
Yeah. And I remember saying to myself, because, you know, when you're young, you think you're a genius. I'm like, this woman is. I should handle her.
Yeah,
I should
manage
her.
Agent.
And then, of course, now she's Wanda Sykes. But I always remember night after night after night performing for 10, 15, 11 drunk people.
Yeah.
She was completely herself in her own voice, and she never pandered. And
right.
And she's got a rhythm that's not super fast, so if you're not going with her, they would, like, kind of just not give her the time of day. And then you'd see her come in with a decent crowd who had a clue, and she'd fly. Yeah. But she wouldn't pander, and I always loved that about her. And Louis, you know, besides the jerking off, I never saw him pander to a crowd ever.
Yeah.
Like, it's the difference
he always
between
had
people
his own
who
voice.
Know. Yes. You have your own voice, and you're going to sink with the ship, or you're not.
And right. That's the funny
they
thing.
They stay true to
and,
themselves no matter
even
what.
Even if you try to work your voice,
right.
But you're not going
right.
to alter it.
Right, and that's the funny thing, and we've talked about this before, too. And say what you want about him. I like him. You know, all of a sudden, there seems to be this massive backlash. But I watched Dane Cook in front of 20 people at the Comedy Connection at Faneuil Hall, jumping around like he was in the middle of Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. And I remember the owner at the time going, I don't know, I just don't get it. Now, of course, that guy sucks his ass, you know, as much as he can to get him to come and play his places. But he didn't compromise. So, yeah, you think, what the fuck is this guy doing jumping all over the stage? There's 20 people here. Didn't matter. That was his voice. That's what he wanted to do. And you know what?
Well, when it was wrong. He wasn't Garden, polished. It took many years after that, but he was committed to doing what he was doing.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know.
And that can be, especially when you're new and unknown, that can be the hard part, is to stand there and do that and say, I'm going to commit to this. And
nobody
stay
wanted
this.
To follow Robin Williams either.
Right.
You know,
right.
The same
right.
thing. He'd walk in and he was a spaz.
Yeah.
But I remember Dane taking off his pants and being his tighty whities and doing Mick Jagger. Yes. And he's got the music pumping in. Yeah. And they're like, okay, now Al Ducharme. Like, what happened?
What did I do?
What just happened? Yeah. And the audience is in kind of like a frenzy of half of them are with him.
What
the other
just
half
happened?
Is like, yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't a comedy club the way I was used to.
Yeah, right.
It became this other thing, and it took a while for it to settle down. Mm. So, yes.
But your voice has always been the same,
too. Bobcat Goldthwait was like that.
Yeah.
Like I said, everybody said that about Robin Williams. You know, Letterman says that. Nobody, when Robin came in the room, everybody was like, I don't want to go on this guy, because he just took over the room.
Yeah.
Right. His energy. Right. You know?
But you were the same. You were the same way, though. Like your voice, with your act outs and your characters. Mm-hmm. Like it's not a surprise to me, or probably anyone else that's ever seen you, that you would end up doing character.
No,
you know,
I know.
Voiceover
I know.
Work,
I was a spaz
you know?
On stage, especially in the beginning, before I honed it in and fine tuned it. I was all over the. I was throwing it against the wall, and
literally.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm not saying I didn't do this.
No,
stuff.
No, no. And I'm not saying
I did do it, but. Years later,
years later, he's got a bad back because
he
it.
Can't do it.
Well,
the cup of water, the kid, the baby. I don't know if you still do that one.
It's so funny. It's called the Cherry Coca Cola, right? The Cherry Coca Cola. Yeah. Someone just requested that. Mike Clark's sister.
And I never saw it. She kept going,
really?
Is he going to do Cherry Coca Cola?
I haven't done it
in
years.
What the hell are you talking about?
We're doing a fundraiser, and she goes, oh, do it. And Mike Clark's, my sister Deb's coming in. She wants the Cherry Coca-Cola. I'm like, Mike, I haven't done it in so many. I didn't remember, how it went. So I'm pacing because she's coming in, and it's a big moment.
And
she's bringing some friends
now.
And relatives.
And they're all expecting it now.
And I'm in the back going, how did I say this? And
So
I'm trying to figure it all out. So I go up, and I do the bit, and It didn't do well. I didn't have a handle on it.
No, you did it for her a few years back.
It didn't go well.
You see?
Yeah, I see.
I'm being honest. This is not.
No,
this is only a few months
but
ago.
But you don't understand.
Woman. This is a man.
But you don't.
I'm a white male man. We still rule this planet.
But you don't remember. She originally asked you to do it 2 years ago, and you killed with it, and I never saw it. So then, during the week, we'd be performing somewhere, and I would go, do Cherry, because she was like, do Cherry Coca-Cola.
And sleep.
And no, and we were
that's
working.
From years with Frank Santos.
And we
exactly
were,
where it's
no,
been.
But you don't remember. She asked you 2 years ago, and I had no idea
it
what she was talking about.
It was many years ago.
And
you're exaggerating
the
story.
No, I'm not exaggerating.
I'm
and
the man.
She's giving you a compliment.
I will meet to you in a heartbeat, Al. I will take you down.
I know you
so,
will.
So. You did it. It crushed, and I thought it was hysterical.
Ace
so then
video.
Later, we're working together, and I yelled out to you. I was like, do Cherry Coca-Cola, and you were like, no. Like, you wouldn't do it anymore. And then
can
you did
I,
it
can
again.
Can I finish my story now that you hijacked? Is
I don't
okay?
like your tone.
Okay. Enjoy the flight home.
I wish we had a video podcast, because if you could just see the dynamic and how Bernie just literally turned her back on him and said, no, I don't like your tone.
Anywho, it didn't go the way it would normally go in previous years. And I was like, oh, I wanted it to, you know, to really cry. And I came out of the showroom, and there's Debbie. She's at the bar. She was never in the room.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
she wasn't even in the room when it was.
And the only reason I did that bit again
was for her.
You still do the chicken on sale?
No good deed.
Well, it's funny because he's saying all this because we recently had an episode. We had some guys in and we were talking about, I think that was the Comic Genius episode.
Oh, what makes
and,
a comic
and we were talking
genius.
About certain how certain comics, you know, can stand there and just say jokes and be very funny and witty. And then some guys are very good at acting out jokes and creating characters. And Ace brought your name up and he talked specifically about the two jokes that he just said, the cherry Coke and then the chicken joke and
chicken
everything
on
like
sale.
That. So he was describing those jokes.
My parents,
how to work the system.
I do that a lot. I do that a lot on cruise ships.
Yes.
Because half of them have the nasal cannula.
Exactly. So.
And he's talking about the cord around your nose.
A signature bit that's still going.
I love that bit.
Classics never die. Never die. So those are certain ones. Would that one work in Scotland?
Which one?
Have you ever seen him do
chicken? In Scotland. And the chicken. Scotland. Anything, as long as it's good. If they smell weakness, it's blood in the water and
you're
dead.
Yeah, you don't try a new joke on those crowds.
No, you do not.
No, and you mentioned Robin Williams, and he talked about that, about performing in England and Scotland. He used to like to go over there because they would cut you off in a second.
They will, yeah.
And he goes, it was the only place he ever saw a host use the C word in the opening sentence by going, you know, hello, you, you know, welcome to the show tonight. And he's like, what? That's how we're starting off the night?
Yeah.
And it was just like
here it
nothing.
Probably works, right? Because they use that word a lot more in England, right?
To them, it's just a word.
It's like saying, anything. Hey, bitches.
Yeah. I did have one night a bartender, one of the shows I was doing, the bartender had been on stage several times and they requested him to go up.
Yeah.
So he jumps over the bar and he goes on stage and he had a very thick Glasgow accent. I couldn't even understand what he was saying. It was almost like Gaelic. But he was up there,
and we're like, what's he saying?
The crowd was going bananas. And he's mentioning all these little towns.
Because he's got the local humor.
But I really had
Mike
a hard
Donovan
time
talking about Pete's Pub.
Get like every seventh word. I'm like, I think that was a word. But he crushed it.
It's kind of like Ace and Warwick talking about Salty Brine.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of my shit when I do my local
stuff.
No
school for the gloss. Yeah.
See, Al's seen me.
His son
still.
He's just Wally.
Yeah,
he just
retired. Yeah. Lauren and Wally. Just retired in Boston, right?
Yeah,
they were in Boston. Just did a big thing on that.
How did the
Bill Burr thing come along? Because I like how Al just kind of like very humbly says, "Yeah," and then we started doing that.
He's not good with compliments.
No,
I'll tell you,
have to audition, or did Bill just say, "Hey, I've got a character"?
A little bit of both.
You know that I think you'd be perfect for.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we had lost a comedian by the name of Pete Cummin. I don't know if you remember Pete Cummin, a Boston guy.
That name.
He moved out to L.A. and he was planking or exercising in his home. 49 years old, aneurysm.
Really?
Dead. His twin 10-year-old boys are in the next room, and his wife is in the other room.
Horrible.
So, devastating news. So we had a fundraiser.
Yep.
For Pete's widow,
and his
boys. So, you know, it was a lot of Boston guys.
Right.
So Bill was on the bill.
Yep.
And he actually called me on that one, right? Because we did a couple of them. We did one for Barry Crimmins, too. But that one he called me. He said, hey, I want, you know, get these guys together. Let's put it together. I go, of course. So we do it. And I'm up there doing all my voices and my characters and everything. And he goes, dude, I said, I'm so glad that I saw you because you're in the back of my mind. We just got another season and we're running out of voices. And I go, I know so many people with voices.
Right.
So would you come in?
Wow. I'm like,
would I come in? What do you mean come in?
Yeah.
He said, I guess that's the lingo. Will you come in?
Yeah. Come in for a sit down or come in to the studio and just
so I'm like,
play
of
around.
Course. So he took some clips of mine and showed them to the writers. They have 14 writers sitting around the table and the showrunner, Mike Price from The Simpsons. And they said, this is perfect. This is a perfect fit for this character that we've already mentioned, but we haven't seen yet. So they go, come on in to the table read. So I go to a table read, and I'm thinking, okay, it's a cartoon. It's an animated show.
Yeah,
be like 25 people in a room, and we'll just read the script and whatever. And so I get there. It's in the ballroom of a hotel, and there's like 60, 70 people, and it's like a big production.
Yeah.
And they have these tables set up in a T, and they have the people from the animation production house, some executive producers from everywhere, Netflix execs and everybody, and then the entire cast, and the cast is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And me. And we get to reading the script. They get to my character, which is basically my kid on the telephone. I don't know if you remember the bit I do in my act about a kid on a phone.
Oh,
They actually wrote
trying to tell the story.
Yeah, they wrote my character. They took my character and just implemented it into the script.
Wow.
So, of course, I know it.
Yeah.
So they get to me and my lines, and the whole room
explodes.
All
you're doing is reading these lines as
I'm not even reading them. I'm doing my act.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And, you know, all the executives came up to me and said, welcome to the family, blah, 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 blah.
Wow.
And Bill's like, you killed it. You crushed it. And I'm like, oh, okay, great. Let's go do a cartoon.
Oh my god!
But it's an adult animated show, and it's cutting edge, and it's about our youth. You know.
Yeah, we were talking about it before we started
and
recording.
I think it has a big underground following, and I think it's groundbreaking. To be honest with you,
it is.
I know I'm a part of it now, but I really appreciate it. You know, of course, I've seen every single episode, and the arc of the storylines and everything.
I've only seen like 3 episodes. I think I got to the one where they buy the answering machine, and it records him, and he gets in trouble with his wife. And but it's just funny.
It's vulgar though.
Bill.
So
absolutely. Yeah, but it's a perfect character for Bill to be playing.
He said he wanted to do animation because he could do whatever he wanted to do on Netflix,
right?
Or even one of the other paid networks,
streaming services. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. So
it always seems like an animation you can get away with a little bit more than you can with live sitcom.
Yeah, you can push the envelope
because you look at some of the stuff they've done on Family Guy and South Park. You could never get away with on a live action sitcom. So I think animation is definitely the way to go.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're on Netflix too, where they give you a lot of freedom, it seems
to do
what you want, which is great. I love the show. I've been watching it since the beginning.
They said that
I love the show.
The notes they get are limited to, oh, you can't say that, you can't do that. They kind of let them. They have received those notes.
Yeah.
They said for the most part, they let them really push the envelope.
Right.
So that's cool. But
because there's a market for adult humor, adult animation.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's not just Simpsons and Family Guy. There's there can be more.
Although great shows.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Hey, listen, I'm sitting here in awe because, you know, that's been my dream, was to do animation and voices and stuff. And I'm still sitting in my basement in Rhode Island, you know.
And I was doing that in the beginning of my career. I was doing a lot of radio and voiceovers and characters.
Right. Well, and now they don't, like a lot of the radio stations around us, they don't hire people to do
that. No, they're in-house.
It's all in-house. It's all the DJs that are caught in commercials. And they very rarely, and there's been one guy in Rhode Island that it has been the voice guy for years, and I just think they don't think to call anyone but Ron Hayden. The guy's been around forever, you know.
Radio's become a very tough market.
Yeah.
Because we've talked to a few radio guys, and it's Chris Zito and Matty Blake and those guys, and that's become a really tough market.
Yeah,
now.
Mike Coleman was the guy in Boston.
In Boston. Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I had commercials running on other stations. It was me. Mm. And then the ones On whatever BZ.
On what he was on,
He was doing the
same
exact
commercial.
Like, yeah.
Oh,
but
wow.
It was that same voice. He had the perfect voice. And
right,
he let him
right.
edit everything. They would just send him the copies.
Yeah.
The copy, and he would just read it, and he was killing it. He was doing stand up too at night.
Yep.
He was an impressionist.
Yeah, because I was working with him for a couple of. And he was the WBZ dumb guy.
Yep.
That was the big commercial
run.
Is
he still around, by the way?
He's still around, but I don't think he's doing comedy. The last time I worked with him was Burke Mountain, Vermont, like 8 years ago.
Because he was crushing.
And he was saying that he was kind of, I think it was family, like he was sick of being away from his family, you know, all the time and stuff. And
his paycheck for the radio stuff was not
bad. I'm sure it was good.
He just loved doing stand-up.
But they probably weren't paying him anything extra to do all that extra work of the voiceovers and stuff, which is why that's why they do it. Mm-hmm. You know? Why are they going to pay me to come in and do a couple of voices?
Well, they don't have to set up sessions and all that. You know, I was doing voiceover when I was living in Providence, and I'd have to get up, you know, at 4:35 in the morning and get in that traffic. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm a comedian. Oh, yeah. I don't want to be in this traffic.
Well, right.
And drive to the studio to get there. You know how long it would take?
Right.
Have you done that drive? It's an hour away,
yeah,
but it's 2 hours, right?
Right.
Am I right or wrong?
Absolutely.
Right. It's insane.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Even that's changed now. Matty Blake was telling us when he was on is most voiceover guys have home studios.
Right, right.
And they record
right.
at home
yeah.
and you send can, it all
yeah.
in now.
A TL line.
Yeah,
or whatever,
that,
yeah.
A lot of that stuff has all yeah. changed now.
True,
so
true, true.
It's a totally different market.
Which is why our podcast studio can come in handy for me now if I ever get off my ass and actually cut an actual
a demo reel.
Well, people
you know,
are doing auditions on their iPhones and sending them in.
I did it once.
It's amazing. What you can do on these devices with editing and everything that you want. We have equipment in your basement.
I know. We're going to do it. I just got to write
something out. We can easily edit something for you.
I got to write
something
out.
You keep
saying,
I have this dream.
Yeah, I know.
The only thing stopping you right now is you.
This is me.
One of my co-stars, her name is Debbie Derryberry, and she's a big voiceover person. She was a Jimmy Neutron, the animated.
Oh, yeah.
She was the
yeah.
voice of him and a bunch of other big ones, and she's co-starring now on F is for Family, and she auditions on the road.
Yep.
Still.
Yeah.
I mean, she gets a lot of offers, but she
right.
still auditions.
Yeah, you work up to the
but
point.
But she'll go in a closet in a hotel room if she's
yes.
on the road
yeah.
somewhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she goes, sometimes I'll put a comforter up or towels
yeah.
and I'll
right.
just get in there on my iPhone and just send it in
and send something
stuff.
In. That's crazy. I know.
Yeah, they make inexpensive mics you can plug into an iPhone if
yeah.
you even want to go that far mm-hmm. and
yeah.
do it. It's amazing what you can do now. Ace.
Okay.
All right. We've been talking about this for a while now.
Ace.
I'm throwing this back at him. So.
Well, you know what it is? We had Matty Blake on, and he was telling me about, you know, his agent. He's through Don Buchwald, and he's like, they have a whole voiceover, like, talent section. He goes, you should just...
So
cut,
in other words, Ace is running out of excuses.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it doesn't hurt to throw it in there.
Yeah,
you know. And if you can cut stuff out of your own home and send it in and just get some work every now and again, why not?
That's all.
So
I'm looking for. Okay.
We're going to work on this.
All right.
Because
I'm
going to be his agent.
Al. I feel like.
So is your show still
it looks
on
like
or
we
done?
Have two married couples here.
Yeah, I know.
we're as close as you can be.
Yeah,
to
we're not that close. We're not going to be laying in bed tonight.
Butter between two friends. French fried potatoes. Ain't no bigger than a squirrel.
Reagan, I like small
squirrels. No,
fried
that show was over a few years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So you. So are you working on anything right now, or are you just waiting for? You still want to make the move back?
At some point. Yeah. You know, always like a few irons in the fire, so
yeah.
to speak. Not to sound too obnoxious, but
you did some great character work today, Bernadette Pauly.
Yes,
she also did
that's
some
right.
great character work last month on a webisode of a web series.
Oh yeah.
I'm gonna toot my own horn. Called The Two Dicks. It's about 1950s moronic detectives. That is politically incorrect.
As a 1950s.
And he does it.
Yeah.
Detective
do it with,
show should be.
Should be.
You do it with Al, right? With
Al Romas.
Al Romas.
Al Romas.
He was an Omnipop guy.
Yeah.
He used to come around to Comedy Connection
you know.
All the time.
Yeah,
I worked
comedian.
With Al.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can find it on Facebook, The Two Dicks.
Instagram.
And hysterical. On Instagram.
Twitter.
What are you guys? At
YouTube.
Two Dicks 2 or something?
It's all there.
Just
if
look
you
up
Google
Two Dicks.
If you Google
but
the
not
Two
on
Dicks,
Pornhub.
You're going to get...
No.
Well, be careful.
Don't look at the images.
I was going to say, be careful.
Wow. Don't look at the images.
But watch it. There's two seasons and watch them.
Make sure you put The Two Dicks, not just Two
Dicks.
Yes.
Two totally
different
Google searches will come up.
Yes, good point. Good point.
But yeah, so Bernadette said that there's two seasons and you want to watch it.
There's two seasons of The Two Dicks.
Yeah, we have we did 10 episodes the first season, and we're up to 4. We are scheduled to film 5 and 6 in Napa.
Nice.
Yeah, see, Al lives in Tampa. I live in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
And we shot one up in Boston when we were working a club together. We've been booking a few shows live, The Two Dicks Live.
Okay.
Basically, we do our stand-up, but we show... episodes
clips.
And clips, and we have a little Q&A.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun.
And
how long
is
each episode?
Each episode is very good and stands on its own, but if you watch it from start to finish each season,
it's just so much better.
Okay. Yeah, callbacks and you really get to know each.
It jumps around sometimes, but there is, an arc, and you can tell that we're gelling better, and the production value hopefully goes up every time we do a new episode.
And, and how long is each episode? Between 3 and how many minutes?
They're short, but they're great.
That's what a webisode should be.
We were really, in the beginning, we were trying to get them down to like 2 to 3, but we have too much fun there that we can't
Two dicks can't solve a mystery in two to three minutes.
No, exactly.
You know, there's no
Scooby-Doo
way.
Scooby-Doo took 20, you know.
You can't save the dame in 2 to 3 minutes.
I will say that the meat of the majority of them are under 4 minutes, and then you have the opening and ending credits.
Yeah. And you've shot in Boston. You've shot
Tampa, Boston. Some of the episodes, they say,
on a cruise ship?
Newark, where it's based. The character... Uh-huh. Characters are based in Newark. Newark,
Atlantic City. Yep.
And now Napa.
Yeah,
yes.
So you guys get around.
We do get around. All right.
So, and then Bernie is involved in a web series, or was that a one-off that you did today?
That was part two to something we did with the Cotters.
Yes.
No, that's you and Tom Cotter.
Right.
Did Build-A-Brothers.
That's it.
Build-A-Brothers.
D-U-H
and we do these exaggerated, horrible New England hybrid
this old house,
dirty perverted this old house.
Yeah. One joke, hammering one joke to death, and then reviving it and then running it over. It's just it's foolish. Yeah. And you know, Cotter's the man of puns.
Oh yeah, yeah,
and
exactly.
A professional and quick. So,
so the first episode that you did a while back was all about cock, because you were cocking.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
cocking.
Which we thought was genius, and then we found out that SNL had actually done a sketch.
They had done one,
and we're like, oh, Cotter was so deflated. I go, we're still putting it up. We're still doing it.
Never gets old.
So we just did a sequel to that after a long hiatus in between, and we were planning on shooting this episode a long time ago, but we just couldn't coordinate it. So. We came out here, Bernie and I came out here to do shows. We were at the Vineyard. We're at the Seacrest now in Falmouth. But they have a cottage on the Cape. So we just went over there and said, let's just do it.
Yeah.
So the four of us did this silly.
Spent the day playing.
And Carrie and Bernie just came up with these two characters. And we kind of named them.
Paula and Donna.
Yeah, and they just ran with it.
And that's so now we're like,
well, let's put it this way.
Now you got your own web series.
I told everybody, go, if I can easily delete this if we're not happy.
Yeah.
So
he says that with everything he does, by the way.
Yeah, no.
Everybody in LA is like, I'm a genius. And this one's like, oh, it's not good enough. I'm just going to get rid of it.
Well, the two dicks, out of the 14, there's actually 16 episodes. Two of them will not see the light of day. Oh, no. I showed some clips from one of them, but the other one will not make it out. It's just, it wasn't there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's digital.
Yeah, right. That's the best part about it.
Right.
Well, Scott was just Ace's personal coach calling him on some bullshit. Now I'm going to say, Al, we're going to be positive.
Yes.
We're going to move forward with the positive.
Yes. But realistic as well.
Did you hear me say, Al, I think
what we shot today is definitely worthy of me spending some time and getting an episode out of. Yes.
Yeah,
I'm feeling
absolutely confident
about that. Whereas a couple of the other ones I'm talking about, I was like, I don't know about this, Al. Yeah. I don't know if this one's going to make it.
Yeah, but
you see, this is the New England thing,
though.
You find the negative possibility in everything.
Right.
Somebody could be like, here's $1 million.
Yeah, but I got a tax account
now.
At the
IRS
same time,
is going to be up my ass.
At the same time.
If you know any of the New England comics, that's a true story.
Yes. Yes. At the same time, that when we were done shooting that particular episode, we still had an afternoon available.
Yeah.
And I said, now what about this other idea that we have we've been bouncing around? You just want to try to execute it? He goes, yeah, what the heck? We might as well get it done. And of course, that one became a little bit of a hit. a mini hit. You know,
yeah,
it was
you
very
never
popular.
Know. Work begets work.
So
yeah,
no
yeah.
work
the
is
one
wasted.
We, the one we were doing up cleanup actually came out very well.
So. Right. Well, and that's the thing. You never know. You just have to keep putting out content, mm-hmm. whatever it is.
Yes.
I mean, you know, I had no idea. You know, I came from, I listen to Howard Stern all the time. Mm-hmm. So he is not a big fan of podcasts. He doesn't understand podcasts. Mm-hmm. He doesn't, I get it, because he did it a different path.
Sure.
But so I had that thing. And then when, you know, Scott said, hey, you want to be on my podcast? I go, what fucking podcast? What the hell is that? You know? And here I am two and a half years later.
Right, right,
weaseled
right.
my way to co-host.
10 episodes
yeah,
in.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, it's
yeah,
exciting. And if you put the effort into it
yeah.
to make it happen, like you guys
and
came all the way out
that.
Here, you know. That's
well, you know, and it, what's fun is we go on and we see it growing and we see the downloads increase every mm-hmm. month. And mm-hmm. it's exciting mm-hmm. and it's fun that something you're creating, more and more people mm-hmm. seem to like it and are downloading it more and more. So,
yeah. And we just
you know, because when I was in high school, my dream was to be a radio DJ, mm-hmm. to be on the radio. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of living that fantasy.
Sure. And,
yeah.
and it's under your control.
You get to be on the
right.
radio and not
right.
get paid.
It's, which is totally different than if you were actually
You don't
on
have
radio.
To worry about losing your job.
No.
You don't
no.
have to worry about yeah,
no.
yeah deadlines. And
No, exactly.
You don't have to worry about asking for a raise because we don't get paid.
You don't get paid anyway. Anything's you know? A plus at this point.
Exactly.
You know, we
But the possibility of
yeah.
all of that is
and we
too.
But we like doing it because
yes.
you know what we're doing? We're hanging with friends. Mm-hmm. We're hanging with people that we either we know or we all do the same thing. So like we had a guy on last week. I don't know when his episode's going to be out. Neither of us had met him. We're Facebook friends with him. Mm-hmm. But we had a dropout and the guy who dropped out who was sick said, my buddy can come on tonight if you want. By the end of the night, we're all hanging out, having mm-hmm. fun. You
yeah.
know, we're busting each other's chops. Like we, it felt like we knew him really well. You know, by the end of the episode, and we really it was an hour and a half. We were sitting there in my basement.
It
know?
Was a great episode getting yeah. to know this guy who we never
yeah.
knew
they
before.
should make all AA meetings podcast.
Yeah,
yeah,
because yeah. it brings people together.
Yeah, that's you pretty know? Funny. Not the craziest idea I've ever heard, but.
No.
But
here's a podcast, the AA podcast.
Next on AA podcast.
Yeah. All right, you heard her here first. That's going to be Al Dushan.
Doesn't
his
that
next idea
defeat the purpose of one of the A's?
Yeah,
well, just kind of put it out as
yeah.
a podcast.
Just use
I'm
first
just saying,
names.
Right.
Just,
I've never been to
we
a
could change
meeting.
The names.
Just use first names.
Yeah, or code you know? Names.
Yeah, or code names.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'll be Donna. He'll be Paula.
Mm-hmm.
What are the two dicks' first names? do you guys have first names?
Al.
Yeah, detective.
Oh,
we use our real
names.
So it's Detective Dushan,
and
Detective
yep,
Romas.
And Detective right. Romas.
Yep.
Oh, really
Romas.
Went out on a limb
Al
with those
Romas
characters.
Is yeah, funny yeah. You know, Al Romas is one of the reasons why I got moved up from a host to a feature.
I did not know that.
Yes. I had worked with him and Adam
Wild.
Ferrara at the Comedy Connection in East Providence. Mm-hmm. And it was like the second time I got to work with those guys. And they were like, why the hell is this guy hosting? Like, you should move him up.
Oh, cool.
And I looked at Dana and I said, yes. Why don't you move me up? And then
well, her,
did.
Anybody in those positions' job is to keep the local guys
yeah,
under
no,
wraps
exactly.
to be able to not exploit them, but to
oh,
use
yeah.
them for to cultivate
yep.
you
yeah.
know, to a following and.
Exactly.
Keep some strong.
Still,
you want some ammo in your
yeah.
gun. Yeah.
It's still
in case
happens.
You do get into the jam.
Right.
Well, I thought
where
it was
the headliner's not showing up. We got to
yes.
move things around.
Right.
Who
yeah.
can do the job? Well, we
oh.
got Ace. We got Scott. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
We got a show.
Well, I thought it was such a compliment when Dana said to me that time. You know, I know I should be moving you to feature, but you're such a good host. Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
And then someone says, "That's not a compliment."
Yeah. Right.
And
yeah.
I'm like, "It's not."
Well, you can always say, you know. Some hosts make feature money
yeah,
because they're
yeah.
so good.
Well, I did have a club.
And there are some hosts that will make headliner money
yeah.
because it becomes their show.
City Steam in Hartford, you know, several years ago, they said, we know we should have you closing shows, but I'd really like to keep you a feature, but we'll pay you closer money,
mm-hmm.
and we'd like to keep mm-hmm. you a feature. Okay.
Back
that's, I'm okay with that.
Back
yeah.
in the Boston days,
yeah.
Gavin and Noxie
right.
and Sweeney, those guys, it was their night.
Right.
So they were making $500 and
right.
they were coming in and hosting.
And
yes,
host.
We just yeah. talked about that recently. Yeah. The at Faneuil Hall Connection, when I first started, it was a headline host, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Their night, Nazi. Where they they opened up the show and hosted the whole thing.
25 years ago, making $500 on a Tuesday night to host your own show, and every and people buying you drinks.
Yeah,
oh, wasn't a bad gig.
No, not at all. No,
no, I remember Noxie was Monday nights.
Noxie, you guys, you're so young.
Yeah, look at you.
Your cocks are hard.
Opening beer bottle to the tip of your dick. I'm not doing it justice. But,
but it's so funny whenever we talk about Noxie.
Everybody snaps.
Anyone
into
who
that,
knows him, they snap into the impression. You know,
such a great guy. Those of you who don't know Kevin Knox, a wonderful comedian who passed way too young, and everybody adored him.
I've never had anyone say a bad word about him. Never.
And he, even after he got diagnosed and, you know, everything, he never lost that energy.
Positive.
Ever.
Positive
right
attitude.
To the end.
And the thing is, like, he was known for his signature mullet, and then when he lost all his hair, he fucking embraced being bald. And, and then you couldn't even imagine him with a mullet. You know what I mean? He still wore the tracksuit.
That never changed.
A track jacket and shorts. Even if it was like February, he'd come in.
But the first night I ever met him, I'm in the back of the room. It was my first time on stage ever. Monday night, Faneuil Hall. I'm in the back of the room, you know, shaking like a leaf. Cal Verducci introduces me to Kevin. And the very first thing this man ever says to me is, how's your cock? I said, are you ready? And I'm like, who the hell is this guy?
You young guys, you're so feral. God damn it.
Pull it out. Let me see it.
But if we went out late nights, which we did many times in Boston, we go to the neighboring bars, to the comedy clubs. And if we had way too many, Noxie was always like on hand. All right, you got to take a cab home, and and then he'd call you the next day. Hey, what's going on?
Like, how you feeling?
How you feeling? Yeah. I go, great. It's like 9:30. What are you doing up? Yeah. He goes, I've been up since 7. I got the car wash. I'm going to play a quick 9.
I played 9 holes. Exactly. It's like crazy.
He was a machine.
Oh. He had one of my favorite jokes where he talked about. At the end of the night, when you have the dilemma of having only enough money for either a cab ride home or getting a pizza, and he said, just do what I do. You go to the local Domino's and order a pizza and hitch a ride home with the guy.
The delivery guy, yeah.
Domino's delivers.
Yeah.
Delivers me.
Yeah.
Thanks for the ride. Give him a slice for a tip. He was just such a super, super nice guy.
I know.
So. Yeah. You know, and it's funny because we talked about some of the guys that have passed away. Every single one of them. Bob Seibel, Rich Seisler.
Love
all
Bobby
sweethearts.
Seibel.
All sweethearts.
Yeah. Bob Seibel, terrific
guys.
Guy. Yeah. One thing about it, when I was starting out, because I was a little younger than them, there was a few guys that embraced us, especially from Rhode Island. They didn't. The Boston guys didn't want us.
Yeah. Didn't want us. Did. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So we were no good. It was very hard to penetrate that market up there. But Noxie and Seibel... And a few others were welcoming with open arms.
Seisler, DJ Hazard, Chance Langton.
Chance gave me one of my first paid gigs, if not my first paid gig, outside of Periwinkles.
Right.
And, I heard you're doing well, blah, blah, blah. But, there were a few guys that were, but a lot of those guys were assholes.
Oh,
yeah. They made you earn it.
Yeah.
But... A lot of those assholes became good friends.
Exactly.
But you had to work for it.
Mike McDonald was one of the biggest dicky ball busters that I had ever met.
Mm-hmm.
But once you earned his respect.
Very supportive.
Amazing. I mean, even we've had him on the podcast, and when we come out with an episode, he'll share it. Like, not even his episode. He'll share it and go, hey, take a listen. These guys are really, you know, they're building a really good podcast. And he hooked us up with, when we were talking to Chance, he brought up that he grew up in the same town as Red Peters. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with Red Peters.
Yeah.
Dirty song guy.
Yeah.
But
he was on Howard Stern a lot, and he had his own show on Howard 101 on XM for a while and everything. So we had him on.
But he writes songs like Blow Me and I Only Think of You When I Jerk Off or something like that.
Blow Me. Yeah. You hush. Yeah.
Yeah. No, blow me, you hardly even know me. Just set yourself below me.
That's what it was.
And blow me tonight. Yeah, so we ended up reaching out between Chance and Mike McDonald, they got Red Peters. We you know, had him on a show. So, and of course, I'm shamelessly, I ask everyone. The worst people can say is no. Hey, I can't be on the podcast. But I reached out to Mike McDonald because he posted an old video clip of Tom Kenny from when he was in Boston. And he's saying, you know, what a great guy he is. And I go, hey, do you think you'd ever come on my podcast? He goes, let's talk, you know. Can't hurt. But no. once you... But once, that's the thing. What you
once,
had to
once you earn it, yeah,
because
he didn't
guys.
Want anybody just to come in and you know, you had to get your stage legs, have focus. Do you remember the stuff that he used to send around, the videos? And were you ever a recipient on any? Mike would edit on like two VHS tapes, clips before the internet. He was doing this stuff, and he put these. Some of the most hysterically funny clips of anything. You know, you can find on YouTube. He was doing it before YouTube.
Really?
And we would circulate them, and they were hysterical. I would watch them with Cotter, and we'd smoke a joint and watch these. He goes, Mike gave me this one. Let's check it out.
So what was it? He'd send you a VHS tape?
Yeah. He'd hand it up. We circulated it around.
He invented YouTube. We got to tell him. He owes some money.
Yes. Al Gore invented the internet.
And Mike McDonald invented the YouTube.
Yes. Well,
when we had Mike McDonald on, I even brought up that the first time I worked with him, After I left the show, I was like, that guy's a dick.
Yeah.
And now he has helped me out with stuff.
Yeah.
Because
you earned his respect.
Yeah. It's exactly what it is.
And you knew it.
He kind of sets the stage right up front of how this is
going to be. Oh,
do we
mention what a funny motherfucker he is?
Oh, yeah, my God. Hilarious, too. Absolutely.
But you knew when you earned his respect because he would say, he would say, hey, don't talk about this. I do a joke about that. Mm-hmm. And then
Very honest.
Yeah. But then all of a sudden, one night, he's like, hey, I was thinking, you know that joke you
I was
do?
Just going
to
say that.
Yeah. I do a joke that's similar to that. Is that all right? I'm like, wait a minute. Mike McDonald's asking me if it's okay if he does a joke similar to
mine.
I
knew I had earned his respect when he gave me a tagline.
Yes, I was going to get to that.
That's when I knew I had his respect.
Hey, you know that joke
he gave
me
a tagline. Yeah. Because he actually listened to my act and found something funny.
Yeah, reverse the order.
I was like, okay.
I remember him doing that with me a gazillion years ago, changing the order of something. Instead of saying this, you say it second. And that was the key to making the joke work.
The similar thing he did to me is he goes, I would say this opposite and then use this tagline afterwards. And it just totally changed the joke.
Well, because we're always
so well.
In our own head when we're working on a joke. I mean, how many times do you get, you know, you get this joke that's not, it's hitting, but it's not hitting the way you really thought because the concept to you is so funny.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden someone goes, hey, have you thought about saying this? And they take it in a totally different direction. But you're so focused on this one direction and getting from A to B, you never thought to go over here before you get to B.
Yeah, you don't have to go to B first.
No, exactly.
You go to A to C and back to B.
And back to B.
That's the best part about comedy.
Absolutely.
Go wherever you want.
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much.
Absolutely. So we got to ask the final question.
We always ask this question, and we want to hear multiple stories.
Yes,
Bernie has a vagina.
So the hermaphrodite thing was just a joke in the beginning?
We had it removed 2 months ago. Thank God. What a dick.
And that was huge. His web series is going to be called Three Dicks. No, so we always ask, and we told you guys up front, you know, we always ask our guests if, you know, if they can give us a funny bad gig story. So we've all had bad gigs, and sometimes they're so bad, and that night you can never think that you're going to look back on it and be able to laugh about it.
Does it have to be funny? Because a lot of these are sad.
Some of these
it's one of those
it may
ones
be funny
that
to the audience
that
you know.
As it's happening, you're thinking maybe I'll apply at Enterprise tomorrow.
Yeah,
you know, one of those. But when you're in the green room 2 weeks later and someone tells their bad gig story, you're going, really? That's yours? Let me tell you mine.
Right.
You know, those type of stories.
Which one do you have, Bernadette?
God, I just have so many. And you and I have done really, really horrible hell gigs together.
That's why their relationship works.
Great gigs together.
We actually did one just a couple weeks ago together. But a barroom gig that was like, oh, wow, I haven't had anything this horrible.
Hey, but here's the thing.
Yeah, I know. So, okay.
How do you want to tell the story?
I'm not going to tell that story. I'm going to tell a different story.
How many how do you know this is a bad gig things are going to come up in one of these stories?
We did an episode of the podcast where we had a panel of like five of us, and we came up with a list. We were sending out for a list of 10 things, and the title of the episode is "You Know It's Going to Be a Bad Gig When." And then we tried to come up with 10. We ended up coming up with 12.
Oh, good.
So
this is as a comic.
The fact that you said it's a
you
it was
walk
a bar
in
gig.
The room, and if you see any of these things on the list, you know this is going to be a
this
bad gig.
This is before we had done the gig a few times prior,
and it worked well.
And we kept saying, "I'm not doing this gig.
Yeah, like,
I'm so not doing
so many
this
gigs
gig
like that,
ever
right?
Yes.
Again.
Oh yeah.
I'm never going to
do
it again. I'm never going to do it again. Then you do it. And usually you're redeemed and you like the audience from whatever, because you conquer whatever.
Yes.
And sometimes it's like, oh, I have a corporate show coming up. I got to get some stage time. I put the feelers out, and I only got a couple spots. I need like four or five to work this stuff out.
Right.
You know? And it was one of those things that came up.
Yeah.
The text. Do you and Bernie want to do the gig?
Yeah.
And we're like, oh.
And it's it must be like being a hooker that's really just trying to pull yourself out.
Just one,
right?
Yeah.
But
one
then you just
John.
Desperately need $88 and a John comes along and says, "Do you want $100?" And you're like, you know, you're like, "I was just gonna go to technical school, dude." And, you know,
or you're a cheap hooker, like behind the dumpster hooker, and you just want to get to escort service level.
Exactly.
But you can't. You just like,
one more.
One more. The dumpster.
One more dumpster.
We were just joking.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
He's pulling from real life.
No,
I'm sorry.
No.
I'm too real.
You were trying to come up with $88 over there.
I'll tell the story backwards, then you can tell you you're healthy. We did this end of last year. We said, all right, this is the absolute last time we're going to do this gig. We go do it, and the crowd is magical. The crowd is magical.
In a shithole gig. You know how you walk into a shithole gig and you're like, this is going to be my death, and it's amazing. And then you walk in and you're like,
hole,
I got these
it was
people,
a shit
and
gig.
They annihilate. Okay.
It was a shit gig when we did it prior.
First.
And then we walk in, and now they got five pool tables.
Yeah, which is a good one.
So now you're like, oh, no.
Number one on the list.
Yeah, it's one of the
and
that
they
was
got,
on the
then
list.
They got the monitors, and they got the games on, and they put the volume down, but they still have the monitors on.
There's two. You guys, you've already named two. Yeah, go ahead.
These were on the list. Okay. These were on the list.
Did they have
a sound system? I videotaped it when we walked
in, so
I'll show it to you.
The waitress, there's only one waitress. It should be three. There's only one, and it's her first night because they can't keep anybody hired because the owner is
an asshole. Yes.
So we do it. The crowd is magical.
Yep.
We get approached after the show, and we get hired. We get hired for a corporate gig for a
out of
really
that
nice chunk of change.
And we have no idea. Half of us were like, of course, we'll get you that contract in the mail right away.
Yeah.
You know, on Monday, just get it approved. And it's a great gig.
Yeah.
And the other half of me is like, should one of us tell this guy not to scout talent in a Jodie Foster in the Accused venue? You know what I'm saying? Like, I was like, dude, your company's letting you hire...
You they don't get comics at Big Dance Pool Hall.
Yeah, right.
They had just had a meeting, and they said, we got to hire some comedians. And then he saw that there was comedians down the road.
at the bar.
He goes, let me just go in. I've never been in there. And all of a sudden, we have the best show
ever.
Just like, so that was the prior one. So we get the text again. We're like, oh. Should we do it one more time? We're like, well, it went so well last time. We got this
gig.
We got a
nice corporate gig out of it.
Let's go do it again. And it was horrible. It was just horrible. But that's not... Tell us your bad gig story.
Well, there's so many. But we just did it, and it was a night. It was every bad thing that could ever happen.
And by the way, everybody listening, most of our gigs are not like that.
No.
Yeah, no.
We're fun, and we love doing it.
But what's good is that by us asking people this question, it kind of humanizes...
Yes.
What we do, because people just assume Chris Rock crushes every night and Louis C.K. crushes and you guys crush every night. They don't understand, like, all right, you saw me and I had a really shitty show, but that doesn't mean I'm a bad comic because every comic, no matter what level, has these bad
Jerry
shows.
Jerry Seinfeld on his Comedians in Cars recently told about he did a corporate gig where he went in the tank. And just couldn't get his way out of it for an hour.
Like,
recently.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I've got to listen to it.
He blamed, who's the guy that he has open up for him a lot?
Tom Papa?
Yes. He blamed Tom Papa.
Well, Tom is notorious for ruining shows.
He said...
I'm kidding.
I'm looking at you going...
Well, he said because Tom introed him as the greatest comedian in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as soon as Tom said that, he goes, everybody in the crowd went, oh really? Yeah.
For the first 5 minutes, your fame carries you, but after that, you need to prove something.
They looked at me like, who do you think you are? And it was over. For his entire set. So it doesn't matter who you
are. Back to Mike McDonald. I remember introducing him because he really was a guru to many of us.
Right,
I gave him this big intro. The second show he goes, you know, say my credits, but don't say the funniest guy ever ever seen and all that.
Just say this.
Because you're setting me up.
And
you're setting
this.
The bar up high.
That's the way he used to. And it was like, say this, this. And then, welcome to the Mike McDonald Show.
Yes.
I love that.
Go ahead.
I love that. It's not really funny per se, and I don't have a million, but I performed at a college in Tennessee with three other comedians. Ray James was one of them, very, very funny writer and comedian who was writing for The Family Guy and 8 billion other shows, who actually helped me get my first TV gig at Burley TV. He was a writer then.
Yep.
Some other guy named Mike, I'm not sure if he's still performing anymore, and Patrice O'Neill.
Okay.
So they fly us to Tennessee, which already there, that's a nightmare. It's a college, that's a nightmare. It's an outdoor show. In a courtyard.
That's on the list.
This was a good 10 or 12 years ago. And I, as a kid from the north, not a kid, but before all the controversy about the Confederate flags was...
Okay,
so we're at a university, and there is a gargantuan Confederate flag hanging from the third floor down in at a college
in Tennessee with Patrice O'Neill. Yes. I know where this is going.
Yes. So,
because Patrice was a wallflower, he could easily just keep quiet, right?
So, I mean, this was more a hell gig for me.
Yeah.
But in my head, I'm thinking, I'm not comfortable with that. You know what I'm saying? And I'm an Irish girl from Boston. I'm not like Miss PC.
Yeah.
I'm not a social... But I was like, I really don't care to perform underneath a gargantuan Confederate flag in Tennessee. And it was a mixed college. I saw white kids and black kids. So I'm thinking, being a girl from Boston, I'm like, hello, black kids. Go rip that down and beat some people. Like, I didn't understand. Because in Boston, that's how it happens.
That's
There's
exactly
a physical confrontation,
right.
And one person hurts the other until someone wins.
Or the riot police show up.
Yeah, I wasn't even trying to be... Yeah.
Right.
So it wasn't computing. And then I'm like, oh, my God, it's a noontime show, outdoors, in the sun, Confederate flag, and a girl comes up to me, and, this is when I hosted Burley TV. It was called the Burley TV Tour. So it was just ridiculous that they even put it together. But I was grateful for the work. And a woman comes up, and she's very friendly, and she says, hi. And it's already like 10 past 12.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, let's start.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's get this shit going. And the woman says, hi, we'll start as soon as the children get out of the service. And I say, what service? Is this a military college? And she says, oh, no. There's a memorial service for one of our students. He just died in a motorcycle crash. And I said, let me get this straight.
Fourth thing on the list.
I said, you're having a funeral service for a student, and then you're bringing
and
them all
comedy.
Back here for a comedy show in front of a large Confederate flag, which she ignored me saying. That she just ignored it.
She
like
just
it
ignored
never
that
happened.
Part of it.
And she's like, we won't be long. And she ran away. She did that Southern thing where she just smiled.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like, would you like a lemonade?
Bless your heart.
Bless your heart.
Totally.
Like sweet tea.
And then, eventually, Patrice probably didn't even show. Eventually, kids get out of a memorial service.
Yeah.
And they look sad, and they're walking, and now they're congregating still underneath the gargantuan thing. So, asshole that I am, I start. So I get up, I'm like, hey, everybody, welcome to the post-memorial service comedy show. Like, what do I say? It's going to be, you know, these three guys just put up with me.
Yeah.
And I just had to go, and I go, and what the fuck is up with that? Like, and I just point, and they all just stared at me.
They don't understand.
White and black were just like, why are you doing that? And I think, I'm the truth teller here. Let me tell you how it's going to be.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't get that. Like, didn't they stop doing that a long time ago? And I go, and like an asshole, I go, black kids, hello, you've got to kick some ass. And they looked at me. And looking back, they were probably like, please don't get our ass kicked.
Yeah, right.
You know? And then I saw out of the corner of my...
We just got in here.
Yes.
Exactly.
So out of the corner...
And it says back. That was the trade-off. Okay, you can hang the flag. Yeah, right.
So I did like... I was supposed to do like 20 minutes. I probably did 18 and a half. And I basically just ate my ass the whole time. Yeah. Like, and they're looking at me like, what is she? Why is she here?
Right.
Why are we
Who
here? Our friend just died. Oh. Could you not do this to us? And then I see Patrice walking up a path. He's arriving and he's monitoring the situation. And I'm thinking, I'm sure he's enjoying and he's watching me sweat. You know what I mean? So then I bring up the first guy and he eats his ass. He eats his ass for 20 minutes and just tanks and gets off.
And that's
and I
why
get
you
back.
Said in the beginning of this story, I don't even know if he's doing comedy anymore.
Yeah, I don't think he's doing. I don't. Yeah, and I can't say I blame him. And he was a decent comic too, but it just wasn't. And then I get up and I'm like, okay, so I guess you hate the guy too. It's not just women. Like, and they already. It's the South.
They already hate you.
It's the
you
South.
Just keep rubbing
I'm talking
salt
about race.
In the womb.
Like, and at this point, there's nothing to lose. And
right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and
absolutely.
I'm hosting for Burley TV, so I'm like, I can't get fired. They can't. Right. Fire me. They've got like 80, you know. So then then I bring up Ray James, who's a great writer, who alienates the entire, who, if you want to talk about confidence, he just pulverized all of them and alienated all of society. And he's not right or left. He just fucking hates everyone.
He hates everyone, yeah.
And they stared at him like deer in the headlights, yet they had a respect that they didn't have for me. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
because
they
were like, this man detests us, but we don't understand what
he hates everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And then Patrice, so he does his 20 minutes, doesn't give a shit because he writes for the show and has TV money and just walks and goes and gets a beer somewhere. Picks up a 15-year-old probably. I don't know.
Well,
no.
Tennessee.
No. What? Yeah. What are you going to do? Yeah. And then Patrice just got up and I had to watch it because I'm like, because they were like standing in the hot sun now for 45 minutes and it's not a comedy.
Not
it's,
enjoying
it's
themselves.
Not, it's not the right, like who paid for this shit is beyond me. And then he did it for himself for a few minutes. And then he started alienating some people. And there was two Asian girls that he started making fun of their asses. And because they've got flat asses. He
Patrice.
Probably, yeah, he said a couple things about me. I don't remember what he said. It might have been something like little Bernie got a bubble butt, you know, whatever. And I'm like, thank you, Patrice. I was just so happy to be done for the day.
Yeah, right.
I was like, please. And he did a couple minutes on their flat asses, and so it was the South, so it lasted longer than it would have up north.
Right.
But then they got aggravated, and then they started walking away and leaving. And as they left down the long sidewalk to go back to the college, he basically just, he did, the last 15 minutes were just on their asses as they
walked. As they walked away.
And everybody just stared at him.
Yeah.
And then when he was done... He was just done, and I think he basically told them all, there's something kind of wrong with you. What are you doing standing around here while I talk about two Asian women's asses? And they're, like, he basically addressed it in his funnier way, but they were still shell-shocked. And then I just got up, and I was like, thank you, guys. You were awesome. You know, I did that. Thank you, guys. I've been Bernadette Pauly.
Yeah.
This is amazing. And, you know, and it was over. But, you know, it wasn't the funniest gig. I've had more atrocious gigs, like with him 2 weeks ago. But this particular thing was who
booked
put up
this?
Who said let's spend $10,000 and bring four comedians in from across the country
right after the funeral
at noon and on the sidewalk?
Yeah,
we've talked about it before. People don't understand comedy.
They don't
understand you need a specific environment.
Right. There are things.
We're not background,
it's not a lot,
music.
And they think,
but
you're
there
being,
are specific things you need to make a good
comedy. And they think you're being a weirdo. Like,
or they
you
think
say,
you're being difficult
by
saying,
oh, are you a diva because you need lights that work?
Right.
Or a mic.
Right. But it's really not a lot, but there are very specific things to make the show. And I'm not talking, it's not that it makes it better for me. It's going to make
it better
for
them.
The audience.
Yeah.
So they enjoy the show.
But they don't get it.
But they don't understand
like
that.
When they want a 2.5-hour show, because they're like, we want our money's worth. And you're like, that's not, like when they want an open bar for 3 hours before the show, and you're like, that might not be a good idea.
Remember that New Year's Eve? Well,
me and you.
Sorry. Yeah, we did the New Year's Eve show.
Yep.
Hey, we're going to have an open bar for 2 hours
before the show.
Before the show.
We both had people off
and people
trying to do coke with us.
Hammered.
Yep.
Throwing
hammered.
Up. Carried out, yelling at us before. It was horrendous.
I think it was like a company thing, too. So your company's going to spend all this money.
But that's not the story I wanted to tell.
Well, let's
Oh, really? What's the story?
No, I'm just saying that was one of the stories that we worked together where they had open bar. You want to hear? Oh, you want to hear my?
Yeah, let's hear it.
All right, I'll tell you this one. When I was doing the NACA, for the college showcases, which is the National Association of Campus Activities.
Yep.
And basically, you pay all these fees, and you submit a tape or a DVD at the time, and to get picked to showcase in front of a bunch of colleges that would come to a hotel somewhere, a convention center, and then all bid on you or hire you. And you try to get a bunch of colleges, as many as possible, and a block booking. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you'd get 3, sometimes you get 0, sometimes you get 50.
Right.
And it was all a crapshoot depending on when you went up. So I'm doing my first national one. It's in Los Angeles. And it's my I've showcased once before in a smaller region, but not a big one.
Mm-hmm.
And the hosting position is what I get. And my agent said, if you submit for the hosting, you'll have a better shot of getting in.
Okay.
I said, well, I don't want to host. I want to just do my 20 minutes and skedaddle. And
yeah.
No, hosting, you can really clean up. So when you host, you're hosting a bunch of different acts. You could be doing magicians and bands.
Right.
And jugglers, mentalists, comedians, painters. And so, and it's a big, it's a sea of 600 students, and it's a big show. It's a big show. And so the production manager comes up to me and says, no matter what happens, if we have a technical issue, you got to cover the time.
Yep.
And when I give you the signal, then you can introduce the next act. So the very first act that I have to introduce is an acoustic guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
And all they have to do, it's a curtain behind me. All they got to do is place a seat next to a microphone, two microphones. No, one microphone.
One for the guitar, one for the voice?
No, he was just an acoustic guitar, so it was just one microphone. That's all they had to do. So I do like a 10-minute opening warm-up. That's what I'm supposed to do. There's a clock there. My 10 minutes are up. Okay, now for our first act, blah, blah, blah. It comes from Italy, and here he is, Sanjo, la, 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 la. The curtains open up. The chair's not there. He's looking around. He's walking around like a pigeon. Where's my chair? Where's my chair?
Yeah.
Someone comes running in from the wing, puts the chair down, and so I start saying stuff. And he's looking for his chair, ladies and gentlemen. And, and here comes the stage. I'm doing play-by-play in the moment.
Yeah.
He goes out. He does his thing. I go backstage. What are you doing? You're making fun of the staff.
Oh, my
God. I go, I'm in the moment. I was trying to cover you guys. You weren't ready. I go, you had one thing to do, put a chair down.
Right.
You could have put the chair down a half hour ago.
Right.
The curtain was closed, you know. So the next act we bring up, something else happened. There was another technical snafu. Yep. I'm supposed to be doing 5 minutes. Now I'm into 15. Now I have 45.
Right. Plenty of material, but you don't
And when you get to the college,
through.
You do like 15 crowd work, and you get to that hour mark.
But right.
I got like a solid 45. You know, it's pretty decent.
Yeah.
And I'm through my 45 minutes because they had an issue
every time.
So now I'm like, okay, we're going to take a little break. And I go to step off stage. I go, this is ridiculous. It's 20 minutes. I don't have any more material. That's your job. You got to get back out there. And they were all over me, man. They were in my grill, just giving me a hard time about it. My agent's going, get out there, Al. You can do it. Improvise. I go, okay, improvise? I've already been on stage for an hour and 5 minutes.
Right.
I only have 45.
Yeah. The one time you did improvise, they yelled at you.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't make fun of anyone. God damn it.
So I'm angry, too.
Yeah.
I'm angry. So I go, okay, everybody. And the crowd hates me. They're actually booing me. And they're like, oh, when I walk out, they're like, nah.
Oh, he's
not. Not him.
They've had
so I'm not, I know I don't have any dates out of this.
Yeah.
I flew across the country.
Right.
And I spent, hundreds of dollars to fly
to do
out.
It. Yeah.
And hotel and everything. And my fees, probably a grand. So as in your 20s, in the 90s, whatever how old I was.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money. So I'm so frustrated. I said, okay, everybody, I'm going to do a magic trick. Do you like magic? Which I've heard other comedians do bits like this. I go, I'm going to do a magic trick. I said, in order to do the magic trick, I'm going to need a Nike sneaker. Anybody have a Nike sneaker they want to give me so I can all of a sudden... six Nike sneakers come flying at me, like 40 miles an hour. I'm ducking and whoa, and they're hitting
Nike
the curtain behind me.
Son of a bitch.
I go, and now I need a Reebok sneaker. And then the same thing happens. And a Puma. Now the stage is littered with sneakers of a sea of 600 students. So I start gathering the sneakers in my arms. And I go, okay, here's the trick. And I take them and I throw them into the sea of... I just throw them into the sea of students. I go, go get them. So I throw about 18 sneakers in all different directions, and they are pissed. Trying to make their way through the crowd and the chairs to get their sneakers that are on
and
the
then
ground.
And beat the shit out of you.
Well, I knew I was done at that point. You know? Yeah. So I didn't care. But I actually got two gigs.
Did you really?
I got two out of it because they thought I handled myself professionally.
Really?
And they thought the sneaker thing was hysterical.
I was going to say, they wanted you to do the sneaker bit at their college.
Hired him for the sneaker bit. He didn't do it.
Never mind the material or anything else. As long as he does the sneaker
bit. Don't do any material. Just do that sneaker bit.
Those people are really cool because they said, you were awesome. We knew that they were the technical issues they had. They put you in a very bad situation. But you were funny.
Yeah.
Especially your first, you know, like 40 minutes or so, 45 minutes. It was all there.
You never know.
Yeah.
You never know.
I didn't know that story. That's a great story.
That is a really good story.
That is a good one. That's I like that.
And so that's my story. I know. We appreciate I just appreciate you guys coming all the way out here and keeping your podcast alive and making that extra effort. That's awesome.
Oh, no. We enjoy, you know, especially for me, because I didn't come up with you guys and I didn't know you guys very well. So this was fun for me discovering for Ace going down memory lane. He always loves these episodes.
I love these episodes.
You know, talk about the old war stories and stuff. Like when we had Charlie Hall and Frank O'Donnell on and they were talking about the old Periwinkle days, I just sat back and just let those guys,
those kick the story. They started our scene. Yeah,
they blazed the trail for us.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun. So we appreciate it. Obviously, people have got to come out and see you guys at a show sometime. You know, very funny comics, but check out F is for Family. But you know, websites, Facebook pages.
BernadettePauly.com. BernadettePauly.com.
Yeah.
AlDucharme.com. At Stand Up Al on social media. At Bernadette Pauly.
At the Bernadette Pauly on Instagram.
At the Bernadette Pauly.
Bernadette Pauly was taken.
That's right.
Who was the bitch that took that?
I don't know. She's going down.
Let's kill her. Oh, shit. We recorded that. Edit that out.
Okay.
Yeah, he never edits out.
You know, when a guest asks me to edit something out, I'll take it out. But when he does, fuck him. I'm leaving it in.
That all the time. I'm like, we fucked that up. We can edit it out. And then all of a sudden, I listen to the episode, and I'm like, I thought he was going to fucking take that out.
I want to keep it organic.
Yeah.
I hear. Check out a episode or two or of the Two Dicks. We got thetwodicks.com. You can see us on YouTube. Facebook is where we get a lot of traction, but we're also on Instagram and Twitter. Also, F is for Family on Netflix.
Yes.
With my boss, great Bill series. Burr, and Vince Vaughn is actually our executive producer.
Is he really?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yep. But we have an all-star cast. We have Laura Dern, Sam Rockwell. The list goes on, and I am honored and happy to be a part of it. So tune into that. And you can always catch me and Bernadette Pauly. We travel the universe doing our shtick. Add to that, girl.
When are you guys coming back?
I got nothing.
When are you guys coming? She sounds like me. At the end of every episode, he goes, Ace? I go, I got nothing.
Let our guest promote something. I go, Ace, you got anything? No, I got nothing.
Well, because you know what it is? We record, and I never know when we're going to put an episode out because we have like three or four in the can.
Yes.
So it's like, well, I'm not going to say, hey, I'm at the Chuckle Hut this weekend.
And then you're not.
Guess what?
Yeah. Yeah,
that was 4 weeks ago the podcast.
You're at the Chuckle Hut? Who books that?
No, I know. But the webisode that you did today with Terry Louise.
I did the Builder Brothers. These characters.
It's actually
Brothers.
Period.
And then yours is an offshoot of that.
Terry Louise and I just did these two characters, Paula and Donna.
As part of the episode.
Okay.
As part of their episode.
But they carried the episode. I can tell already.
It was exciting. We may do it again.
That's awesome.
We're going to have
to do... So be on the lookout for
that. You might have to do a spinoff like the Ropers.
Yes.
Exactly.
Come on, knock on my door.
I have no voice. I went to Iron Maiden last night, so I ran
still
to the hills.
Bragging.
Did you wear?
You know what?
Did you wear the?
I didn't wear earplugs. I was gonna, And I was with my brother and his fiancée. Yeah, I was with my brother and his fiancée. And I was like, I turned to his fiancée. I said, oh, shit, I forgot to buy earplugs. My brother heard me, and he's a Marine. He's big.
I was
going to
say,
he looks at me.
He
stopped short of calling me a pussy. He just, he goes, don't get old on me.
I was just going to say, at 50, we say earplugs to a concert. At 20 years old, you never would have thought about earplugs.
No, I never would have. But I was three rows up from Iron Maiden, for Christ's sake.
When you're that close,
especially. That's a lot.
Iron Maiden. Somebody went to Foo Fighters and they said 3 days before the hearing went to normal.
No,
they were fearful that it was damaged.
Yeah.
They had great, had phenomenal seats. I didn't bring earplugs.
I wish I did.
Because I would have been able to hear everything. Would have just been muted slightly.
I can attest to that because I saw the Foo Fighters at Fenway last summer.
Okay.
I was in on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an outside stadium.
Right.
And the ring, I saw them on Sunday. On Wednesday, I still had a ring in my ear.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't think
it was a fantastic.
Now you guys got me
concert.
Thinking about it.
But it was unbelievable.
One of my favorites. One of the last remaining rock and roll bands, as far
true
as I'm
rock
concerned.
And roll
true
bands.
Rock and roll.
Dave Grohl is a true rock star.
He really
unbelievable.
Is.
I saw them with his broken leg, and the guy was incredible. Sorry. I'm still.
I'm
here.
Just trying to see if I hear the ringing.
For me, it's still here.
I think I'm good. I think I'm good.
It's still hero worship when it comes to Dave Grohl.
I absolutely love Dave Grohl and Foo Fighters. I'm the same way. I think they're amazing. I love their every one of their CDs. So, all right. Well, that's my opinion, and I'll shut up.
Absolutely.
Now.
So, everybody, thanks for tuning in. Hopefully, you continue to support us as you always do. We appreciate the great reviews. We got 2 more 5-star reviews this week. We appreciate it. Helping us move up the charts again. Last week, the Ray Harrington episode was our biggest single day downloaded episode ever.
Wow. How many downloads that day?
We had almost 3,000 downloads in one day.
Just in one day. Wow.
And we've never had that many one day.
Ray Harrington.
Yeah, because he downloaded them.
Yeah.
That's okay. I don't care.
However we get him, I don't care.
Kidding!
But Ray, that was a great episode, and you know, we're going to have Ray back on. You'll hear him after this episode. Definitely
tune in. We're getting the death match between Ray and
Ray
Derek.
And Derek.
Ray and another comic, Derek Furtado, did a documentary called Be a Man, and it was really good. And there was one scene that kind of created friction between them, and we didn't realize
real off-camera friction.
And so we opened the wound when Ray was on. We learned about it when Derek was on. Then we opened the wound, and now we're just waiting.
We're going to have them on together, and
they're coming
really
on together. So we're really stirring the shit.
Yeah.
Hey, whatever gets it.
So we appreciate the new reviews, and everyone keep supporting the podcast. And other than that, we will talk to you next week.
Hey, thanks for tuning into this week's episode. People have asked us, how can they support the podcast? And obviously, the first way is to go on wherever you get your podcasts and give us a 5-star rating. And Scott, how can they find us?
Well, they can email us, behindthefunnypod@gmail.com. Go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/behindthefunny, or even follow us on Instagram and Twitter @BTFpod. Again, thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you next week.